Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Simple Actions Group, Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Robert, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Robert. Hey, Robert.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Restrooms are across the main foyer up the stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving about the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a clear set of directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book's Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're doing one meeting on step 8 and 9. And I'll turn the meeting over to Graham.
Okay, you can read the paragraph first, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's going to go first.
Following the instructions.
I know, okay. It's wrong.
Sorry. All right. Here it is.
The page number.
Page 76 in the big book is where we're going to start with paragraph 1. And the paragraph starts with, "Now we need more action." Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our efforts to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And now I'll turn the meeting over to Lincoln.
Thank you. I'm Lincoln, an alcoholic.
Hey, Lincoln.
Just real quick, my sobriety date is July 21st, 2003. My home group is Outlaw Safe Cracker Group in Richmond, Virginia. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor other men in Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you, Graham, for asking me to come down, and thank you all for letting me be part of your meeting tonight. You know, I guess this paragraph would be probably the start of step 8, is how it was explained to me. And when I went through this book with my sponsor, he did, you know, very much what your opening reading talks about. You know, he showed me how to take some very specific actions that would help me recover from alcoholism, you know, to help me get out of the way, quit playing God, and get the things that stood between me and God out of the way so I could develop a relationship with this power that was going to save my life. And you know, these are some of these actions that we're talking about, you know, without which faith would be dead. You know, I started to get some kind of idea of faith and even begun some simple prayers, you know, in the steps that led me up to here. And now is, you know, one of the first points I'm really going to, you know, get my feet on the ground and really start taking some action. And so, you know, I was really excited. I had this long list, you know, that I was referring to as my amends list. I made my amends list. I was going to my sponsor, telling him I had my amends list ready. And he stopped me right there and said, this is not an amends list. You know, this is your eight-step list. This is a list of the people that you've harmed. And together, we'll go through this and find out who you'll make amends to. And that, you know, it's just another example of, you know, for me, at that point in time, I had a long history of running the show. And I had a whole lot of ideas of who I was going to make amends to, what I was going to say to them. And without the help of a sponsor at that point, things could have gone a lot worse for me because, you know, I'm motivated by, well, you know, a lot of stuff that we find out in inventory. But, you know, I found out I had a lot of people that, one, I might not have even hurt. But I might have had a fancied resentment in my mind. They weren't treating me right, and I'm self-seeking, and I want to just go apologize to them for no reason other than to maybe try to get their approval or something wacky like that. Or I've done something wrong, and I've really hurt somebody, and I feel guilty about it. I want to rush right in there and make, you know, amends to them so I can get relief, you know. And so my motives have to be really checked here. And, I, you know, we talk about rigorous honesty, and this is a good a point at which I have to really, you know, continue to practice to be honest with myself about what are my motives in making these amends, and I've got to get really clear on who I've hurt, how I've hurt them, and hopefully get some kind of direction about how to approach these individuals to find a way to repair this damage without disrupting their lives. I'll go ahead and stop with that.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm Graham. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Graham.
And my experience with this is that I'm coming right into this after doing steps six, well, really five, six, and seven. So the time after five, six, and seven that I met with my sponsor, the next time he told me to bring my inventory with me, my fourth step, really, and that was going to be the basis of the people that I needed to make amends to, because those were the people I'd harmed, like Lincoln said. And I wasn't happy about that at all, because when I'm angry with you and I hate you, and I'm just, my head's just wrapped around what you've done wrong to me, the last thing I want to do is even be in the same room as you. I don't even want to look at you. If I see you, I want to go like this, not even look into your eyes, because you've displeased me. So that's kind of how I am. It's childish, but I'm a childish person. So I'd already read ahead in the book, and I figured that these guys in AA were seriously suggesting that I basically go to the people that I hated most in this world, and who to some extent, I mean, I did the inventory and I saw where I was wrong, you know, that fourth column. I was able to admit that, yeah, I was selfish there. Yeah, I was dishonest. I shouldn't have stolen from them. But there was still a part of me who was still holding on to what they did to me, because that is my fantasy, is that I'm a victim and none of it's really my fault. If you really knew what it was like to be me, you would understand why I'd behaved like that. And it's really their fault, it's not really my fault. That's my story that I tell myself, and that lets me do whatever I want, because if you screwed me over, then I can treat you like crap and feel okay with it on some level. I can kid myself on. So, you know, this was a bit of a shocker. I love to talk about this. You know, there was a movement, I think it was in the 90s, when everybody was burning their fourth steps, you know, and they would maybe go down to a windswept beach on the summer solstice with their fourth step and a can of lighter fluid, and they would set it on fire. Maybe their sponsor would be there and they would chant or something, you know. I release you. And, you know, that's cool, but you actually need that to do the rest of the steps. But that's okay. So, anyway, Yeah, so I've subjected myself to this drastic self-appraisal. The other thing about this is that this is another time, step four is a big time when I see this, but this is another big time to really cut back on the AA actions and maybe just leave AA. You know, this is a really good time to just fade away from making amends, because it's terrifying for me to go and face some of these people. These are people that oftentimes I'm avoiding. I don't know if, I had this experience just a few years ago, so I've been sober a long time, and I screwed this lady over at work. I know none of you have ever done anything like that. So I'm sitting at a traffic light in Norfolk, and she's sitting in a car on the other side of the traffic light, and I went like this. and turned my head away. I didn't want her to see me. You know, and I'd been sober, I don't know, 13, 14 years. And I'm hiding from somebody because I treated them bad. And like you said, I feel guilty. And I never went and made amends to her, you see. So what a lot of this is about is sweeping that stuff away. Because if I want to stay sober, if I want to be happy and free, then I need to clean that stuff up. It's just, it's not negotiable. I need to go and face those people and clean it up. And they already know the stuff I did wrong. They already know I'm selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, afraid. They already know that. So it's not really news. I'm just telling them that I know it too. Yeah, you're right. That's really all I'm doing. I'm just completing the circle. Those people already know what I'm like. It's not a mystery to them. So, and it talks about willingness. And we'll maybe get into this a bit later on, I think, tonight, but you know, I've had the experience when I first got sober, making a lot of amends and being willing to do it. But I've also had the experience of being long-term sober, needing to make amends for stuff I've done in sobriety and not being willing to do it and putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And that's really uncomfortable. A friend of mine calls that step 8.5. You know, just kind of sitting there, hoping it will go away or hoping I can just push through without doing the action. And, you know, and just real quick, and then I'll shut up. Why are we even talking about this? What has this got to do with drinking? This is AA. Why are we talking about this stuff? Who cares about this? Well, this is all based on the idea that drink wasn't really the problem. Drink was the solution to my problem. Being sober was the problem. And I'm a guy that cannot live with myself sober. Behaving like this, I just can't do it. I've really, really tried to shape up and be a good guy, and I just can't do it. I'm naturally very resentful, and I just stay in that space in my head where I'm just thinking about what's wrong with everybody and how the world did me wrong. And unless I'm actually willing to do this, like Lincoln said, under the guidance of a sponsor, I'm pretty much doomed to drink again. Those resentments will drive me back to drinking. The fear will drive me back to drinking. The guilt of hurting other people will drive me back to drinking. So what we're trying to do here is kind of hit the pause button and clean up all the stuff up to today. And then as we go forward in steps 10 and 11, we're going to try and keep clean, if you like. And sometimes I'm able to do that more successfully than others. It's me.
Okay, next we'll be on page 76 again. It begins with probably there are some misgivings. What's the point? Probably there are some misgivings. As we look over a list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. We lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than our talk, than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. Lincoln?
Yeah, there's a lot in there. The first part of it, probably there are still some misgivings, absolutely. And I think Graham touched on that. I had that same tendency to hang on to the wrongs others had done to me. And, what they did to me was far worse than what I did to them. And now I've got to go and apologize to this person and try to clean this mess up. And that would be tough at times. But one of the words that I had to look up, we may feel diffident about going to some of them, and that idea of being shy or bashful or shameful. And that was a big part of it too, because, my ego rebuilds very quickly, so it takes some actions that kind of, smash the ego a little bit, but it rebuilds very quickly. And it's, it was really hard for me to go to some people and just simply say, I was wrong. What can I do to make this right? I mean, just something that simple. But, as the paragraph goes on, it talks about, leading with the chin, going in there and announcing, I found God. I'm living on a spiritual, basis now. And oh my gosh, it's just amazing. I saw the sunrise this morning and I put it on Facebook and, whatever. And they're like, that's great, but give me my $50 back, And that was the thing, I would complain to my sponsor, I don't want to have to pay back all these people. All my money is going to go to these people. And he'd say, it's not your money, it's their money. You need to pay them back their money, So I can't go into somebody's office focused on, how they did me wrong and, grudgingly pay them back the money that I stole from them. And all the while talking about how great God is, so I needed some direction there. And the book gives it to me. The book, each of these paragraphs, this whole section really hits on a lot of principles. It talks about, tact and common sense and things like that. But let me think, there was definitely a lot of situations like financial amends come up where I'd have to go back and pay people back money that I stole from them. And it wasn't just a matter of paying them back, what I stole. I had to find out, how did that hurt you? It's possible that the $50 that I stole from you prevented you from doing something that you needed to do, or there might be some kind of interest involved, or there might be more than just this apples for apples kind of exchange going on there. I don't know. I mean, going to people that, where I'm convinced that they have harmed me more. And actually, I think we get into that in a later paragraph. So I might just stop with that. But this whole idea of our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us was important. And I'm going to pass with that, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think this part here is important for me to just remember that faith without works is dead. I think what I would like to do, before I got sober, I dabbled in spirituality. I get those meditation books. I actually, my mother was buying them in large volumes because living with me was so miserable that she was trying to find some way to, get a spiritual connection for herself. But I would steal them off her and read them. And it was all about meditation, and then there was stuff about chakras and all this different stuff. It was a lot of New Age stuff, crystals. Put the crystal on your head, it sucks the negative energy out. Or maybe just praying, praying all the time and meditating all the time. And that's great, and in AA people talk about God a lot. They use the God word. And there was a time that used to upset me, it doesn't upset me anymore. But this is very important that it talks about the action. And like Lincoln said, it talks about being of service. to God and the people about us. So this idea that I can do step 4 and 5 and get some relief, and now I can just pray all the time and I'll be fine. Not only will I be fine, but I'll be good. I always wanted to be good. Why can't I just be good? I just want to be good. I'm going to be good now. I wish I'm good. I wish it. Poof, I'm good. Is that really what we're talking about in here? Because I hear a lot of people going on and on and on in AA about God and how good they are. And then after a while, I don't see them at AA anymore. You know? So this absolutely is about making a relationship with God, is I understand God. But it's in the context of taking actions. This is based in action. I'm not a guy that can go to a monastery and find God. Okay? I went to an abbey one time in Scotland and started to steal the communion wine and drink it. That really happened. Talk to me after the meeting, I'll tell you the story. The stuff was potent, it got you really drunk. So I can't do that. I'm a guy that has to find this power greater than me through actions. That's how I get it. And not only is that how I get it, but that's how I keep it. And if I stop taking the actions, it goes away. The connection goes away. It's broken. So I need to constantly work on these simple actions, one of which is steps 8 and 9. It's going out to people that I've harmed and mending fences, making things right, like Lincoln said. Because I'd quite happily just say, if I'm really cornered by the person, you know, like I was able to hide from that lady in my car, but let's say I came right face up to face with her. I might have blurted out some kind of half-hearted apology. I'm really sorry about that. The weather's been great, hasn't it? You know, let's move on because I'm so uncomfortable. But that's not really what this is talking about at all. This is something completely different. I said sorry so many times, nobody was even listening to anything I was saying. That's the great thing about AA, nobody listens to you anyway. They're all thinking, how am I feeling? I don't like that guy over there. They're just sitting in the meeting thinking. But anyway, so I'm trying to put my life in order. And so like Lincoln said, I think this idea that I'm going to go in and brag about how good I'm doing. I remember when I made amends to my parents, I actually had to make amends for the first set of amends I made to them. Because I was really on fire with AA, you know. Because I have to tell you guys, I almost died from alcoholism. I got so bad with this illness that I came very close to killing myself. That's how much pain I was in. So when I came to AA and met you guys, and you were all sober and you were happy, I was like, wow. And I was just, you know. It was awesome to be sober and find you people. It really totally changed the course of my life and saved my life. So I was kind of bursting with enthusiasm for AA. My mum and dad are like Scottish. They're not very enthusiastic. And especially not enthusiastic about me, because I just spent the last 10 years screwing them over and hurting them. And then I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm an alcoholic. I'm in AA. And I can still see their faces. They both just went like this. They're just horrified. Oh my goodness, now he's an alcoholic. Oh jeez. What a disappointment. Why can't he just be crazy? Seriously, there's a huge disappointment. So, you know, I went and made this big heartfelt plea because I really wanted them to understand me. I wanted them... And I think really what I was looking to do was I thought if I can get them to understand me, then that will somehow discount all the stuff I did to them, because I felt so terrible about it. Those are the two people I treated the worst, is my mother and my father that love me. I'm their only son. They love me so much. And I treated them so poorly for so long. And I just wanted that feeling to go away. So I was directed to go back to them after some time had passed and I'd stayed sober. And told, don't talk about AA. They know that you're going to AA now. They don't need to believe you're an alcoholic. You need to believe that you're an alcoholic. Just leave your mom and dad alone. They don't want an alcoholic. They want a son. Okay, so try and be a son. Do you know anybody that's a good son? Well, my brother-in-law, he's a good son. Okay, just do what Kevin does. He's nice. Do what he does. You'll be fine. So that was really it, you know. And so I think that's an aspect of this as well, is like going out telling everybody I'm an AA. It's like, okay, I don't think there's anything wrong with telling people I'm an AA if it's appropriate, but am I using that as an excuse to try and dodge the guilt for what I did to them? That's what I was doing, I think.
Thanks. Page 77, we don't use this as an excuse. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
Yeah, I think this is one where I just had to take it on faith, you know, and just believe that that would be true if I did it. And I had to be reminded that I had agreed at the beginning to go to any length for victory over alcohol. When I was cleaning up some of the damage that I had done while drinking, it was somehow easier, you know, because I don't know if it was just in the back of my mind, I always just had that little truth that alcohol was involved, you know, and so that somehow kind of explains it. Yeah, I mean, I was a jerk, I lied to you, I stole from you, and, you know, but I was drunk, you know, let's not forget that important detail, and so that I think somehow probably made it a little easier. And then I think there was also some enthusiasm of just simply wanting to recover, wanting to get better. And I had some people I had to go to and make amends that, you know, I was wrong about this. But in my mind at the time, I was sure they had done me more harm than I had done them. I had a landlord who I hadn't paid rent to in about 3 months, growing a lot of weed in one of his spare bedrooms and throwing big parties and all this. And you won't believe it, but he evicted me. And I was furious, you know, that he would do this to me. And he, you know, locked up all my stuff and, you know, and he this and he that, all this he did to me. And it was time to make amends to him. And I had some financial amends that needed to be made, and I needed to see him and speak to him directly and admit that I was wrong. And boy, I had to take the bit in the teeth with that one. And it took, it was, gosh, I mean, but it might have been a few years after that that it even slightly occurred to me that I was just simply wrong. That's the end of the story there. And anyway, so there's hope for a guy like me. All right, so, you know, with this idea of, you know, the first paragraph is like, don't talk about God. Well, it's not saying that. It's like, don't go in there leading with God. You know, I need to show, I need to have a demonstration of some actions that need to be done. And that's going to be what really matters more than anything else. However, you know, tact and common sense. If I might be, maybe I'm making amends to a guy that I used to drink with, and he might bring up the question like, well, you're different. What happened? I might, you know, there might be a time where I do mention that, you know, is what happened to me, and it would be relevant. I don't recall that ever happening to me personally. Not that it doesn't or anything like that, but most of the time people have been more interested in what I was going to do to fix the problem I'd created, or what was I going to do to start being different, you know, and especially with like family. You know, and especially in sobriety, right? You know, and I talked about the amends I made from when I was drinking. Well, then I, you know, got sober and just started making all the, you know, hurting people in a lot of the same ways. But now I can't blame it on alcohol anymore. So it's like, well, wait, maybe there is something really wrong with me other than the way I drink, you know? And one of the ways that showed up was in my family, because those are people who wouldn't just simply leave, right? I mean, they're in my life. And so I had the opportunity to hurt them and then hurt them again I'm sorry, heard him again. You know, and with my mom in particular, it got to a point where, you know, I'd do something, I would lose my temper, say some awful things, do whatever, sober, and call my sponsor, try to be a good AA, and be like, oh man, I did it again, screwed up. Well, you know, how can I fix this? And like, well, all right, you know, you gotta go make amends and all this. And it just got to the point where making amends, just, it didn't mean anything anymore. There's just no way I could go to her one more time and just say, you know, mom, I apologize. I was wrong. I was disrespectful, and just own it all. I mean, it's like the same thing as saying you're sorry over and over and over, you know, that it loses its meaning after some point. And I really, there's nothing I could do other than just change, you know, stop talking to your mother, like, or whatever, you know. I don't know, that was kind of the lesson for me. But, you know, there's a lot of places, we talk about that a lot, you know, making amends, like, you know, remorseful mumbling that sorry, you know, that you're sorry isn't enough. But there are a lot of places where it tells us, you know, we need to go and say we're sorry. And I think that was explained to me that is an important part of it, you know, that I don't just show up with a check, you know, or a money order and here's your money back, see you later, you know, but there should be some kind of sincere apology folded into this whole meeting with a person. You know, a lot of things are going to happen here. You know, I'm going to try to meet them at a time that's convenient to them and it's not disruptive to their life. I'm going to try to do my best to find out how I hurt them in ways that maybe I'm not even aware of, and do whatever I can to fix it, sincerely apologize, and then the most important part for me at that point was then to just shut up and listen to them, you know, because I would get into that too, and I had to make amends for some of the amends I made because somebody would say, well, yeah, you know, and then you did this and you did that, and then I would start justifying it, like, well, yeah, but, you know, see, you don't understand because this and the other, and it would just nullify the whole amends. It would just wipe it out because I'd sit there and justify everything that I had just told them I was so sorry about, you know. So, you know, for me, that was a big part of it too, and just learning how to say I was wrong, be willing to make some changes, and then listen to them to see what I could actually do, and then actually do it, you know.
Yeah, I'm the same. I prefer those amends where I'm never going to see the person again. I call them one and done. You know, the more difficult ones are the people I actually live with, you know, my employer, my wife, my children, her parents, my parents. Those are the ones that are more difficult because I have more history with those people as well, you know. This bit about announcing God, you know, I kind of see that as like my AA membership, you know. If I think it would help somebody to disclose the fact that I have alcoholism and I come to AA, then I'd be happy to do that. But I'm a guy that personally, I don't run around telling everybody I'm an alcoholic and I'm in AA. Like the people at my work, as far as I know, they don't know that. You know, I certainly never told them. So, but some people do tell everybody at work. It's really for each person to decide. I suppose it's if it's got any use. But I've made amends to a lot of people who I hated. And this is the real kicker here, because in order to hate somebody, like we talked about earlier, I really need to believe that they're wrong, and especially that they've done something wrong to me. That's really the basis of my anger towards them. And this is really just turning it back on me. It's beautiful. And what it does is it takes all the anger away by just going to the people and meeting with them and just telling them the truth, I was wrong. And admitting my faults. And I like that idea of taking the bit in our teeth. You know, that's when a horse is, you know, got a big heavy wagon and they put the horses on it. And that's that big bit of metal that goes in the horse's mouth. And when the horse is pulling, it bites on that bit of metal and it kind of pulls along. It's actually pulling partly with its mouth. And it's using its whole body to move. So that's not a pleasant thing for a horse. I mean, I wouldn't like to be chained up to a wagon and somebody whipping me, you know. It's not a very pleasant experience, is it? But nevertheless, it has to be done. And it even tells me that making amends to someone I hate is better for me than making amends to a friend. Because there's certain people that were going to be warmly received, you know. They'll be like, well, you weren't that bad, you know. You're not even an alcoholic, what are you talking about? There will be people like that. Probably other alcoholics that I drank with. Because if I'm an alcoholic, that's kind of awkward for them. But, you know, people that I hate, what I've found is that going to them and just telling them what happened, it really has set me free. I like this, expressing our ill feeling and expressing our regret, confessing our ill feeling. So just sitting down. And probably the most recent example I have of that is these people that I worked for, and I hated these people. It was a terrible job. It really was a bad job. And they really were crazy. But I didn't behave well at all in that situation. I got really resentful and I ended up just quitting. I just never went back. And I was so angry at those people. I was all burned up about it. And anyway, the resentment was so bad and it was so painful that I couldn't sleep at night. And I'd been sober a long time when this happened. I couldn't actually get to sleep. I was just thinking about these clowns and how they did this and they did that. And like we talked about the other week, I'm having conversations in the shower with them and I'm winning in the argument in the shower. But they're not even in the shower. I shower alone, you know, but sometimes, no, there's lots of people in there with me. So, you know, it gets to the point, it's just so unbearable that I call my sponsor. And he's like, okay, well, you need to do an inventory on that. And I'm like, oh, geez. So I do an inventory on this work situation. And the upshot of it is I called up the guy and the lady that were my bosses and asked if I could meet them. And they were kind of scared. They were like, what do you want to meet me for? You know? Well, let's meet in a public place. So they both met me individually. And I hated these people. I hated them. And they were wrong. But I sat down in front of them and I was able, like Lincoln said, to just say, you know what, thanks for giving me your time today. I wasn't a good employee when I worked for you. I was very resentful towards you and I didn't do a good job. I was kind of lazy at work as well. I bad-mouthed you behind your back. And I just want to let you know I regret behaving like that. It was wrong of me to behave like that. I'm sorry. And is there anything I can do to set it right? And once they realized that I wasn't there to try and get anything from them, I wasn't looking for a reference, I wasn't looking for my job back, they were just kind of surprised. And then, you know, we talked, they talked through a bit about how much I did suck when I worked for them. And then we went our separate ways, and I've never seen either of them since then. But listen to this. I'm serious. I think I can honestly tell you this. If they walked into this room right now, or if I met them out in public, I would not have to go like that and walk away from them. And in the past, I would have. So I'm free of that. I can look people in the eye now. I don't have to be scared of who's going to come around the supermarket aisle. So this really does work, but it's not easy to do that. And I'm usually in a lot of pain before I'll actually do this. I have to be in a lot of discomfort. If it's not bothering me that much, my tendency is just to kick it off down the road. It's only when things really start to bother me, or if I get a whole bunch of them at once. I mean, I can probably handle 2 or 3 resentments, right? But you give me 20 or 30, and believe me, I can make 20 or 30 in no time. I could do 20 in this room, no problem. Nothing personal. You know, and then I can't deal with it. I can't live with resentment. It's like poison. I feel sick when I'm resentful. And this is the, it's kind of like the silver bullet to take it away. So these amends are the resentment amends, I think it's talking about here. And then we're going to talk about the money ones later on.
Thanks, Graham. Let's see, page 77 again. Under no condition. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never try to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years of standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress.
Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's order over the dam. Mm. Lincoln.
Yeah. This part, I think I kind of touched on it a second ago, but this has been really helpful to me and some of the guys that I sponsor when, you know, just that question comes up, like, what do I say? What do I do? Like, how do I approach this guy, you know? And, you know, I've listened to Fifth Steps from guys that I sponsor, and I've done inventory with my sponsor where, you know, stuff is shared in there where other people do harm us, you know, and there have been things that have been done that are not right, but it doesn't mean that that resentment is somehow any more safe for me because this person has harmed me, you know. So I've got to do something here, and I've got to go to these people, and that section there, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. I mean, I'd rather talk about his faults. I mean, they're fresh on my mind, you know. But that's kind of like what I was saying a second ago that has been important for me is remembering that just like with inventory, you know, it doesn't, at some point, you know, it's just got to stop. All that they have done, it's just got to stop, you know, and it doesn't matter anymore what other people have done. It's my inventory, you know. I'm the one that's going to drink. I'm the one that's going to die if I drink. So, you know, the work to be done here is mine. And so I'm here at step 9 to clean up my side of the street. I'm not concerned about his side of the street. It might be really messy. That's fine, you know. That's his problem. But I've got to clean up my part, you know. I've got to do everything I can to clean up, you know, fix the damage that I've created. And so in making some of those amends, I mean, it's real time. And you can have this stuff all sorted out in your head. And I've gone in there with a pretty clear idea of how that conversation is going to go. And then, you know, somebody might say something to me, you know, maybe their version of what really happened. And I wholeheartedly disagree, you know, and it's like everything I can do to not argue. I mean, like, let me straighten you out, because actually, you know, if you hadn't this, then I wouldn't have done that, which was wrong, and I apologize for that. But, you know, and so, you know, it's, I don't know, there's been several times where I've just had to just button it up and listen, you know, and not get into the faults, their faults. A lot of guys that I've sponsored have talked to me about, you know, almost like, should I even make this amends? You know, I'm certain they're going to throw me out of their office. You know, they're not going to want to hear my amends. It's not going to go very well, you know, and somehow thinking that, you know, the other person's reaction is somehow going to determine if it's a successful amends or not, you know, and that's where, you know, I've needed to be redirected to that I am only here to clean up the damage that I've created. Period. And how they react to that doesn't matter. You know, I'm here to do what I can, you know, and how many times it's been pointed out to me, you know, Lincoln, you know, calm, frank, and open. You go in there calm and frank and open and don't discuss their faults and listen. And that has been really helpful to me. Yeah, I think I'll stop with that.
Yeah, I have the same experience as him. You know, I think the reason it's telling me this, in my experience, because like Lincoln, I'm still really holding on to that stuff. I'm still really bothered about what you did to me. The justifiable resentments, those are the most difficult ones, when people really did do something bad to me. But see, what I'll do is, I'll take your wrong toward me, and I will use that as a justification for destroying my whole life. I'll drink myself to death, you know, and I've heard a lot of Fifth Steps and people were like abused when they were kids, and that's not right. That wasn't their fault. They were a kid. But the ones that I've spoken to, a lot of those guys, what happens is they then use that, whether it was physical abuse or whatever, they use that as a justification for basically being an alcoholic loser and just destroying and being mean and horrible to everybody, that then becomes a justification. So that kind of stuff's very dangerous for me. And I've had people, my college sweetheart would never speak to me again. And I was directed to try and make amends to her, and I waited, you know, it was probably about a year and a half. I was abroad when I got sober. I went back to Scotland and I contacted her by telephone. A gentleman answered the phone. I asked to speak to her. He asked who it was. I told him. He came back on the phone a few minutes later and said, "She never wants to speak to you again. Don't call his number again." And that was the last time I ever tried to contact her, because I was a guy that was really big into domestic violence. And I would get drunk and go into these rages and attack her. And I'm not surprised she never, ever wanted to speak to me again. That's how much I damaged that relationship. So, you know, I was willing to do it. I remain willing to do it, but I'm not going to force that. And after I made that phone call, in a strange way, I was kind of, like, because I'd kind of been obsessed with her a bit, even after I got sober, and that just kind of cut that cord in a way. And, you know, I haven't really had a lot of people that have offered me assistance. I'm always hoping, like, I'll make amends to someone, and they'll be like, "You know, Graham, here's $1 million. You're such a good guy. You poor, damaged flower, here's $1 million. Go on with your life, my son." But that doesn't really happen. It's never happened to me. But I like this idea. Someone told me this one time, like, this idea that if you're nice to people that you don't like and who don't like you, your enemies, it's like heaping hot coals on their head. So I like that picture of, you know, those big hot embers you get in a fire, and there's some dude that I don't like. If I'm nice to him, I just need to go like this, "Great to see you. How you doing? Ah, give me a hug." Then it's like getting a big bunch of those red hot coals and dumping it on the guy's head. So a lot of times, you know, these resentments, these annoyances with people, they don't disappear overnight. And, you know, it talks earlier on about this is our first approach. So I like this idea of a living amends. And really what I'm doing there is that's the people I'm going to see week in and week out. And that's where there's a lot of power in this idea of acting opposite to how I feel. And very briefly, a great example of that, my first friend in AA, a guy called James. And I really liked this guy, and then I got really jealous of him because he was better at everything in AA, did the steps faster than me. We had the same sponsor. My sponsor liked him more than he liked me. I was jealous about it. And I just wanted to beat this guy and everything. One time I got so angry, I was going to punch him in a meeting. I had to leave the meeting. I was just full of rage directed at this guy. And I would call my sponsor up and just tell my sponsor what was wrong with this guy, James. And he would listen to it. And then my sponsor got sick of it. He said, "Listen, I want you to be..." James and I used to go to meetings together all the time. "Get to his house early. Take over some cookies and take some candy for his kids every time you go. I want you to smile and shake his hand and tell him it's great to see him and ask how his day was and listen to him." And I remember going in there with gritted teeth. I just hated this guy. And I'd be like, "How was your day? There's the candy." I didn't like the kids either. They were annoying, you know. And the wife was kind of shady, you know. Didn't like any of them. But I would just pretend. It's like I was acting. Just pretend I like these goofs. And the strangest thing happened. Slowly over time, I stopped thinking about how much I hated that guy. And he actually became the first friend that I ever had. And years later, he was the best man at my wedding. So there really is power in this. There's power in acting opposite to how I feel. Because what we're basically saying is, I'm crazy. Most of this stuff's not even true. It's just nonsense. But I live my whole life based on this. And what I do with this is I divide and cut myself off from everybody. And that's where alcoholism wants me. On my own, in the room, with the battery out my phone and the shades down. Just sitting there like that. That's where alcoholism leads me. And this is how it cuts me off from people. It starts to judge them and put them down and tell me, "I don't need these people. These people are fools. Not like me." It's weird. It really is. Anyway, sorry. I'm done.
Thanks, Graham. Page 78, most alcoholics owe money. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors, telling them what we are trying to do. We make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approach this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us, arranging the best deal we can let these people know we are sorry. Arranging the best deal we can. We let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. Page 79. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
Okay, yeah, so we're bridging a couple ideas there. I don't think that it's any coincidence that I need to remind myself that I've gone to any lengths to find a spiritual experience when it's talking about me paying back the money I owe. You know, I had a lot of financial amends. I sponsor some guys that when we get to amends, I'm like, you know, they don't have any financial stuff on there. I'm like, all right, well, you know, come on back when you're done with your 8-step list, you know. And they're like, no, I'm done. You know, you don't have any money? Nope. I'm like, you're just a liar. You know, I mean, you've got to be lying. There's no way. And but some of these guys somehow, like, held a job and kept up on their bills. That was not my experience, man. I was a deadbeat. I mean, I begged, borrowed, and stole from everybody. And I had, and I'm still making financial amends, you know. Aren't I great? But that's just how it's been for me. I've had a lot of money to pay back, and so a lot of suggestions I got, you know, on the financial amends, where to start. One of them was the how I was going to pay certain people back, you know. So there was one guy, I can't remember how I got his money, but I owed him like $300 or something like that. And I got $300 together. I was talking to my sponsor about making this amends, and he was saying, all right, we'll send this guy a money order. And I did what I normally do, is start to argue and tell him my ideas of how I was going to either write a check, or I was going to bring, actually I don't need to do a money order. I'm going to do cash. He's like, send, you know, give him a money order. And we went back and forth for a while because, you know, it's just how I like to do it. But he explained that, you know, and this isn't necessarily everybody's experience, this is my experience, but he pointed out that would be good for a guy like me to give this guy a money order for a couple of reasons. One is that I give this money order to the guy and I'm done. You know, for me, writing a check to somebody doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get their money. Like if they cash it this week, they might get it. If they cash it next week, that thing's bouncing all over town, you know. So you know, I need to give him, you know, the money order. It's just done, and I can get it behind me. let's see. It talks about making the best deal we can, and that's where I needed to get honest with myself, because, you know, again, me, as selfish as I am and as fearful as I am about financial security, me making the best deal I can often involves hurting you, right? So I'm thinking, like, well, you know, I need the HBO package and all that. And I'm not sure if this plan you're talking about is going to make much sense to what I need and what I want, you know? So I had to be honest about, you know, what I could do. But you know, in all seriousness, it did involve the idea that I can make an arrangement with somebody, you know, because there's some people where I owe thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to, and I'm not going to just ignore that until someday, you know, I've just squirreled away a couple of grand. It's just not going to happen, you know. So I go and I make an honest attempt to say, this is what I believe I owe you. You know, what do you think? And there's, you know, been suggestions about accounting for interest and things like that. You know, I had a habit of stealing wine out of this little wine shop when I was, in high school. And so, you know, I wanted to pay them back the dollar amount of a 1986 bottle of wine, you know. And, you know, my sponsor wasn't having that. So I had to account for things like interest and all that. But I would go to them and make the best deal I could. Like, what is acceptable to you? You tell me what's good, and I'll try to do that. And that helped me to realize that I could start just putting, you know, putting money back in their pocket, putting their money back in their pocket. And then I got to experience some of the things that would happen with that. You know, I would have fear that I'm not going to have my needs met if I send this check. And, you know, it was just like, don't worry about it. Write the check and send it, you know. And it was just this, like, it would go out one hand, and then some opportunity would come. I'd get maybe a bump, you know, pay bump at work, and I'd be able to send them a little bit more money, and maybe get a promotion, you know, or I do this, and I get a little side job. It just seemed to work. And when I get stingy, it would shut down on that side too, you know. It's just, there's something about that. I don't know how else to explain it. That's just been my experience. If that's, you know, some kind of spiritual force at work, I don't know, but that, you know, that seems to be at play all through the amends for me. You know, a little bit of a tangent, but, you know, also like getting in touch with people that I don't know how to find them, that's been amazing too. I mean, there have been people that I became willing to make amends to, and I literally had no idea how to get in touch with them, and I was told, just pray for the opportunity to make an amends. And I had two people that I had not seen in years who literally showed up at my home group, and I made amends to them at my home group, and I have never seen them. They're not alcoholic. they were there for a church function, right? And I've never seen them there before, and I had never seen them there since. And just had I not been willing and ready, I would not have been able to clean it up when I did. You know, those were financial; those were, you know, other things. But anyway, in terms of the money, I don't know. Those ideas were big for me. You know, the other part of like criminal offenses, you know, and owning up to stealing. You know, that was part of a lot of the reason why I would owe financial amends. I would steal from people, and well, you get the idea. And so going back and admitting that, you know, I used to work in this bike shop at this hotel, and we would rent bicycles out to tourists, and I was just pocketing all the cash, you know, and I had to go back to this hotel and let them know, you know, I stole a lot of money from you. And they're not even equipped to handle that kind of thing. They're just like, I don't know, let me call you back, you know. And they want to tell me, oh, you're such an honest guy. What a great guy you are, you know. And I'm like, you know, yeah. And I would go tell my sponsor what a great guy I am, and he straightened me out on that. And it felt good for like a minute. And they just didn't get it. They didn't know. And they're like, well, you can't really pay us back here. You got to send it off to this other foundation. And that's not so much the point, but I was afraid, you know, I'm going to tell you that I've stolen from you. Are you going to lock me up? Are you going to press charges? It's going to cost me even more money and all that. And the bottom line has been, like, ignoring these fears and taking the actions in spite of. And it looks like I'm running really long, so I'll stop.
We're good. That's us. That was great.
Thanks, y'all. We're going to pass seventh tradition basket, the seventh tradition states. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential. At every level of AA service, it is both a privilege and responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but the intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements?
My name is Mike, and I'm calling. Hey, Mike.
April
4th, 5th, and 6th, the spring assembly is coming to Virginia Beach, Holiday Hotel on Greenwich Road. It's a great way to meet some alcoholics across the state. It's a great way to learn some of the inner work. 14 is responsible for that night, registration table and hospitality tent, which is the food. They've kind of taken away our mainstay of bringing in potluck food. It's got to be store-bought, so that's the big kicker this year. So, home group, please take back to your meetings that we need store-bought food and we'd accept money. We're still working on how to do that part. They've taught me a ton in getting emails out from those GSRs. So we've been hearing about it. Finding out word of mouth is the best way to do this. So please, if meetings go to share. Bodies will be needed that night and food. So if you can help out, please let me know. Or emails will be out. Just let me know if we get in contact with you. Thanks a lot.
Any more announcements?
I'm not calling. My name's Danny.
She's going to the change.
I want to provide information on that soon after the meeting. This coming Saturday, just a few days from now, we're going to have DiscuPod is having a workshop on sponsorship. It's going to be at the Gathering Church from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's on Virginia Beach Boulevard. If you want any more details, you can have the meeting.
Any other short announcements? Let's see, we have a supper and a speaker meeting here Monday, April 21st. 6 p.m., you bring some food if you want to. 7 p.m., the speaker, Tom I from Southern Pines, North Carolina, is here to speak. Is there anything else I need to say about that?
No.
Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise their hands. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety that wants to share their name, first name with?
Hey, I'm Kevin.
Hi, hey, Kevin. Welcome.
I lost my place. We have literature over here on the table. We have a website, simpleactions.net, where you can listen to these recorded meetings. Since about 2012. Let's see, sponsorship question. Sponsorship in A is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, raise their hand. We will have Graham and a lady from our home group, Leanne, up here. If you have any questions about sponsorship after the meeting, they'll be sitting or standing right here. Thanks to all those who participated, Lincoln and Graham. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed at night. You're welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting. Are we having that at, what's the name of the place?
It's a Mexican place.
Plaza del Sol.
Plaza del Sol.
I really can't remember right this 22nd and
Colonial and 22nd. Just go on Colonial and keep going until you see the sun.
Right before the railroad tracks. It's in a shopping center right there. You can't miss it.
Sorry, the soul.
Who wants to read the last two paragraphs, page 164?
I'll get it. My name's Evan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, yeah, man.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you could do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thanks, Evan. We'll close with the Lord's Prayer.
Didn't feel right, didn't it?
Father,
our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen.
Keep coming back.